Hello everyone, welcome to our special OA conference call entitled, What? You Want Me to Sponsor? My name is Nadine. I'm a compulsive overeater living in recovery one day at a time and your leader for this meeting. This evening we will have two speakers sharing their experience around the area of sponsorship and the reasons why some may be afraid to sponsor. These women will also be offering some practical tips on how to sponsor effectively and what has worked for them in their journey of sponsorship. We have two speakers tonight. We have Pat O. and we have Kate V. Pat is going to start us off.
My name is Pat. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I will very briefly qualify. I'm really happy that next month, April, the end of April, will be 9 years in OA for me. I am maintaining a weight loss of 30 pounds, and the amount of tonnage off my shoulders is considerably more than that. Also, I am sponsored, and I sponsor. And when Nadine and I were talking about this evening and the topic, I'm the one that quoted myself. When my sponsor, my first sponsor in OA, said to me, I think it's time for you to sponsor, I looked at her and I said, you want me to sponsor? What do you mean you want me to sponsor? It just literally blew my mind. And since that very early panic attack, it's come a long way. It's been quite a process. And it now is one of the nearest and dearest aspects of my life and my program is to be sponsored and to sponsor. My little shorthand on sponsoring is that the purpose is honesty and the intent is love. My observation is, certainly in my life experience, is that it is a unique relationship because of the purpose and intent. Because we are not hiding behind anything, we're not trying to be anything, we're just trying to move forward in a program together, it sets you up for kind of, the word intimacy feels funny to me to say, but it's a kind of closeness that is quite unique. Because we haven't hidden anything from each other. So sponsorship ends up being this really valuable thing in my life. So recently, I was a part of a remote workshop. I did a workshop in Alaska from where I live in Beaverton. It was really fun. It went super well. It very well organized, really went very well. The one frustration I had, though, is at the beginning of the workshop on sponsorship, people shared some very pointed questions they had about being a sponsor. And darn it, if we didn't get so involved in all the things we did in the workshop that we never exactly came around to answering those questions. But I looked at them and I thought they were fabulous, super concrete and super real questions that people have about sponsoring. So I was going to share them and do a little talk about my take on the answer. And then the realization you all know in program is you take what you like and you leave the rest. You may hear something that jives for you, or you may shake your head and say, no, not for me. So here's the first one, and this one's really a favorite. Will I be good or bad at sponsoring? And next to that in parentheses, I have ha ha. The fact is, I think we all think we're going to be really bad, and guess what? Our sponsees think we walk on water, so who knows, right? But the key there is that more and more and more, I realize I'm not sponsoring. I'm in a process with another person, and higher powers got this. So the fact is that it's going to proceed one way or another. It's going to work. And you know that old thing, all will be well. So just to let you know that the universal question that everybody has is, am I going to be any good at this? Okay. All right. Here's a really specific question that I loved, and this is something that would be fun to have a Yahoo forum on. Ways to structure a phone call with a sponsee. Now, I'm not a big phone call sponsee, although I have two virtual sponsees, and I only get to talk to them by phone. So I realized, you know, Pat, you do phone calls. Guess what? I always thought of myself as a face-to-face sponsor, but ways to structure a phone call, very specifically there is I always try and make sure, I don't know what I'm going to hear from my sponsee as far as what their issues are at the moment. I only know that I'll always be asking them a few key questions. From me, you're always going to hear, have you written about it? Did you write about that? The other thing you're always going to hear about from me is, how does that apply to the steps? What you're going through? How can you use the steps on this issue to help you figure out where you're at? What are some of the patterns of behavior you're seeing that you've seen before that apply to this situation when you look at what you're doing? And so how do we use the steps to do it? So in terms of structuring a phone call, I think the thing there to realize is that you're a big ear. You're listening really hard. And through the basis of listening really hard and having the intent for honesty and the intent and the purpose with steps is that that's going to take your phone call where it needs to go. It's not like you have to have a script. It's not that kind of situation. And I think that the ways to structure a phone call to be very effective, the main key is, did listening happen? Did the person feel listened to? Did you come up with a plan of action around any particular issue? And in my case, well, I'm really big on this, is there something I'm going to take away? Sometimes I kid and call it homework, but the fact is something that the person is going to hang up the phone and know, like over the course of the next week, this is something they're going to be looking at or doing. I find that that makes a nice, neat package of a phone call. All right, so the next question that was related in the workshop was how to help start a person and continue with the steps. And here there's a million tools that you can use to help you here. Some people use the big books, and they literally walk through the big book together. I was sponsored, my very first sponsor used the 12 and 12 and the workbook that goes along with the 12 and 12. For me, that was beautiful. And I, in fact, when I start with a newcomer, starting from scratch, I use that same approach that my sponsor used with me. I use the workbook in the 12 and 12, and I love the writing element. I always say I love homework. I'm a school freak. I love quizzes. I'm really weird. Anyway, so the workbook really appealed to me because of the answer a question, and then we'd share and move on from there. It really worked for me. Here's another really good fundamental sponsor question. How do I make people do what I want? And that's another ha-ha one, you know? But it's a really legitimate question because one of the first things you have to let go of is the fact that you're going to make anybody do anything. And that aspect of being in relationship where the only purpose is honesty and the intent is love means we get to retreat from that crack the whip stuff and instead meet as peers and meet as open-hearted as we can as we go along. And that is what's life-changing. The whip never seems to be that effective. What do you do when you don't want to call your sponsor or when your sponsees don't call you as scheduled? Or if you're a face-to-face kind of sponsor, they stop not, you know, showing up or don't want to make the appointment. That's a really important question because one of the most basic things as a sponsor is to realize for your sponsees, you can't want it more than they do. So when a sponsee seems to be backing out or pulling away, remember, the purpose is honesty. You got to say what you're seeing. I get the feeling that you're hesitant to call me. What's up? Why are you feeling that way? What's going on? So in other words, we don't have to dance around issues. We get to deal with issues. And that is one of the most beautiful things in life, is we don't dance around them. We deal with them. It doesn't mean that the person that we're trying to sponsor is ready for that, but we are going to be offering that. What if you're not a good match? This is a real, it's like a little worry everybody seems to carry around. What if we're not a good match? What if we don't just seem to jive? Well, I can tell you that I have a very wonderful range of sponsees. And if I had met them outside of program and prior to program, I wouldn't have said I was a good match for any of them. And yet they've all become some of the most valuable and just special people in my lives. If you're working the steps together, if you're being that big ear and you're helping someone on their step journey, the fact is that open-heartedness alone is what makes the match. Now, That doesn't mean that everybody in the world has the same style. That doesn't mean that your style of sponsoring is going to be a perfect match for someone else. One of the things we talk about is job interviewing. In other words, if you think you want someone to sponsor you and you have a prospective sponsee, or if you want to be sponsored by a certain person, spend a little time asking them about how they sponsor. What are their expectations as a sponsor? Share with them what you're hoping for in a sponsor. They're going to share with you what their expectations are as a sponsee. For instance, I tell folks I like to meet you face-to-face once a week for an hour. I like to give writing assignments. And the writing assignments are how you get to do some homework between when we meet. And, you know, we make it a regular thing and we show up for each other. We're reliable that way. So someone, if for instance, when I first started out sponsoring, I wasn't really interested in taking anybody's food. So if they were really, really interested in someone they could share food with, I wasn't a good candidate for them. And I would say to them, well, I'm not really interested in taking food, but if you have someone else you can send it to and that works for you, I'm real happy with that. That changed over time, by the way, which is the other thing. It's always a moving target. All right, so another one. How do you build a food plan? One of the things I really love about the sponsoring-sponsee relationship, my sponsor is not suddenly an expert. And as a sponsor, I am not an expert. In OA, we tell folks to go get expert help if they need help building their food plan. We have a lot of resources within OA as far as dignity of choice with the old pamphlet and that kind of thing. It's all going through revisions, but we have those guidelines as well. But one of the things that, again, in the relationship is whatever their food plan is that they work with, it's very nice if, as a sponsor, sponsee, you know that that's always something you could talk about. If that's something they need to work on or finagle a little bit and that kind of thing, that is another area where honesty is so important. But the really good news is we don't need to be experts suddenly for someone else. There are experts out there that can help them. They might have diabetes, whatever. They're going to go get that expert help. What we're going to do is help them work the steps so that there's a way for them to stay abstinent. I haven't worked all 12 steps. Can I sponsor? The fact is, that's one of the best advice I ever heard was that helps you keep moving along in your steps because you want to stay a step ahead, literally, of your sponsee. So it can be very motivating. So the answer is, you have experience to offer a newcomer who has never worked a single step if you're on step two. Can I have multiple sponsors? Or should I just have one? And this one is as individual as the folks who decide what's best for them. There is a point to being consistent with a sponsor, as long as that relationship is working for working the steps. But I know folks who have food sponsors or service sponsors, and then they have their step sponsor. So no right or wrong answer there. Let's see, temporary sponsor or regular sponsor. Right now, with my front tooth being out, it's hard for me to say what I say at meetings, where I say I'm a starter sponsor. And what I mean by that is I'm not going to say no to somebody who needs to get going on the steps, but one of the things they'll hear from me every week is, are you having any luck finding a sponsor? Is there something we can do to help get you a regular sponsor? So they know it is just temporary, but I want them to get going on the steps. Lastly, a question that came up is, should you mix up the sponsors as far as man, woman, that kind of thing. And in the original program AA, they kind of frown on the idea of mixed sexes for sponsoring. Again, here, it's like the having multiple sponsors question. It's what works for you. And if you're honest and if your intent is love and to work the steps, I think you're okay no matter which way that goes. So that was some of the questions that came out of that workshop, and I can't tell you how good it feels to go through those questions and answer them, because I felt so bad that we didn't get to them in that workshop, because they're really good. My wrap-up is this. Someone said, how do you build trust? That was the question I'd handle last, and that is, trust, is the name of the game on trust is putting in the time. When you show up, when you say you'll show up, and when you talk from your heart, trust is a natural outcome of that. And that, again, I would have to say is the hallmark of this very unique relationship that being a sponsor and being a sponsee gives us in the fellowship. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pat. We'll keep our questions to the end. I would now like to introduce our second speaker for this evening, Kate.
Okay, thank you, Nadine. I'll start where Pat started. I have been in Overeaters Anonymous since 1984. I've been abstaining since 1985, and I hate to talk about weight loss, but I was your garden variety compulsive overeater, binge eater, and so I have been maintaining a weight loss of 55 pounds for over 30 years. My weight did come off kind of slowly, but anyway, that's just to qualify. I am a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. I was only 26, was I 20? I think I was 25 when I first came in, and I was desperate enough to stick around. So my two children have left home. I have a 20-year-old and a 21-year-old and a 25-year-old. And when they left home, something happened to me. I don't really know how to explain it other than I became very interested in sponsoring. I've always sponsored a lot of people. I had 6 months of abstinence, and that's when I began to sponsor. So I've been sponsoring a very long time. And it's been very successful because I've been continuing to abstain. So I'm happy about that. But recently, I've noticed that the way I started to sponsor is a little different and a little bit more intense. And I think the reason is because I've noticed that the first 30 days someone is willing to work, they are willing to do almost anything. They're at their most teachable time. So last year I was asked to lead a retreat, and the title was 12 Steps in 30 Days, How I Sponsor. So I try to get people through the steps in 30 days. And I talk to people, I take one person at a time, and I talk to them from 6 to 7 every morning, except on the weekends. I give them that off. And we go through the steps. And I like the clear instructions offered by the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes it's not going to apply. It's not going to work. And my motto is, I do what works. If it's not working, we try something else. But I have to tell you, I have had great success with this. And I currently sponsor 10 abstaining members of Overeaters Anonymous. I've never had so many people who are, you know, have been abstaining continuously since I started sponsoring them. So I'm kind of excited about this, and I treat everyone as an experiment. You know, like, I wonder if we can get through this. Women with small children typically, are pulled in many directions, and so it's difficult for them to get through in 30 days. But so let me start out. What I first do is there are prerequisites for me to sponsor people, and that is, and I sit down with them and I talk to them first thing, and they talk with me, and it's really important that they have a sincere desire to stop eating compulsively. And then I ask these things: willingness to go to any lengths for your recovery. And that's what I ask: are you willing to go to any lengths? Because someday I may ask them to go to any lengths. And, you know, I ask them if they're willing to take a sponsor's suggestions. You know, it doesn't mean forever. We're working this 30 days intensive program that will go to once a week face-to-face meeting or on the telephone meeting afterwards. I ask them to record everything they've eaten at the end of each day and report it to me for the first 30 days. And that is just to identify people who are having real problems with their eating, and they can seek professional help, or, you know, but they have to be willing to be honest at their plate. And that's what this assignment is about, being honest. And then they have to be willing to call me Monday through Friday for an hour. And they have to attend OA meetings regularly. They have to be willing to do those things. And I ask them to be absolutely honest with me, no matter how embarrassed they are about telling me something. And I also ask them to be open-minded to new ideas and ways of seeing and understanding things. So sometimes I sit down with people and I talk about this, And they say, well, I'm not really that desperate. And I say, oh, that's okay. There's plenty of sponsors. You know, there's plenty of people. You know, as Sheila Jay would say, there's lots of ships in the harbor. And, you know, that's true. It's not like any one of us has the answer. Nobody has the answer. We have what works for us. We have our experience. And so that's how I begin. And then, and the reason I just want to tell you, too, that our book tells us, our both books, The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and our over our 12 and 12, tells us that we have peculiar mental blank spots during which time we are defenseless against our disease. So for me, it's really important to get people through the steps as quickly as possible so they have a defense. And, you know, the answer that we have is a spiritual solution. So in order to have that mental defense, we must be, have spiritual fitness. So going through the steps is pretty important to getting that. And I feel that steps 1 through 9 are preparation for steps 10, 11, and 12. So that's the toolbox, 10, 11, and 12. When your toolbox is full after steps 1 through 9, you can feel comfortable that that strange mental blank spot isn't going to come and you're not going to know what you're doing. That's been my experience. I felt the thing that I wanted most in Overeaters Anonymous was that neutrality that they talk about in the big book after step 10, you know, that we are safe and protected. We could go anywhere, do anything, be with anybody, and we never have to compulsively overeat again. And to me, that is what I wanted. I wanted all of that freedom. And so that's my goal, is freedom. And whatever serves that goal of freedom, you know, that, that freedom from the obsession and freedom from the compulsion, that's how I work with people. So I never tell people what to do or give them advice. I tell people what I did. And that really works well for me. And when I take people through the steps, we the first day, for instance, they'll tell me what they ate, and then we'll talk about a definition of abstinence that they can live with for the rest of their life, and then a plan of eating that, you know, that they, that's changeable, but that they can begin with. And then I give them some hints about what was helpful for me in implementing that plan of eating. And then if they have any other issues, like, you might be dealing with a bulimic, an exercise bulimic, an anorexic. I've sponsored anorexics who, you know, they had to drink whole milk for a while. You know, they had to eat butter. They had to eat mayonnaise. Exercise bulimics, limiting their exercise to 7 hours a week. You know, everybody has their own thing. So we kind of have to delve around and work with that. But what I want to get back to is that I really do agree with Pat that I think the reason that this sponsorship relationship works is that they trust us and we love them. There is no one that I sponsor who I don't absolutely fall in love with. I can't tell you when I'm sitting in a meeting and they're sharing, it's brought so much love into my life to listen to people recover, to watch them recover. And that is why I continue to sponsor. And that's why it's my main, like, that's my main deal. I'm not very good at being a World Service Business Conference rep or an intergroup chair or a Region 1 rep. My deal is I love to sponsor. I feel like that is my calling. If they're, you know, my real vocation in life is to sponsor other people. And it didn't start out like that. It's just grown into that. And it's become, you know how people get kind of a runner's high after they run for a certain amount of time? I get that same feeling, that endorphin rush from sponsoring, from being helpful and useful. And this is the way I found to be the most useful. So I, in contrast to Pat, I take people through a very structured day by day. This is what we're going to do, you know, this is what we're going to do today. This is what we're going to do the next day. And because I had to give a retreat, I wrote it up into a packet that I gave everybody, and I've shamelessly stolen forms that make sense to me for working all the steps. And I've also really benefited from going to retreats and listening to speakers, and so I put together a little bookmark for my 10th step and a little bookmark for my 11th step in the morning. And in the morning I read my prayers, I schedule out my day, and in the evening I use an app to send my 11th step to my sponsor every night, and people send their 11 steps to me. So we're told that we're not a very disciplined lot, and so we use the steps to kind of discipline us. And this is really a helpful way for me to run my life. I mean, I've been given these really important tools, how to tell the truth, how to ask for help, how to tell people how I'm feeling, how to admit that I'm wrong, how to make amends, how to atone, and how to work with others, how to give back. And it's not rocket science, and that's really what I want to get across. It's really not rocket science. It's just sharing what you have. And I think I started sponsoring before I worked all 12 steps, but the way I sponsor now, at the end of 30 days, then, one of the women I sponsored, at the end of 30 days, God did something so wonderful. He had a newcomer call me and ask if I could sponsor. And I said, I'm really full, but I do know a great sponsor. And it's this woman who just came off the 30 days, and she started sponsoring immediately. And it was really good. I mean, it wasn't easy for her, but we worked together, and she devised a little, what was she going to do on her first 30 days? How was she going to do it? And so, when I passed this out at the retreat in San Diego and Calgary, I said, oh, please improve it. Make it better. Make it your own. Tailor it. And give it to anybody, because sponsoring is so important, and sometimes we just need a few little tools to help us along the way. And I would never say, follow this absolutely. I would say, take what you like and leave the rest. See if this works. But I am very committed to sponsoring quickly, because relapsing is a bummer. Relapsing crushes people. It makes them think that OA doesn't work. And it's just very discouraging. And sometimes people can relapse and come right back. And sometimes people can relapse and it's 10 years before they come back. So I'm very keen on getting people through quickly so that they have the tools to enter that realm of neutrality. So I have a lot to say, but I don't know if I can say it all, because it took 2.5 days to tell everyone at the retreat. So, but I do know that everyone has a different way of doing it. But because I'm a compulsive eater of the hopeless variety, I mean, I was a hope-to-die compulsive eater, and I couldn't be in the world without having food on my person. I was really a mess, and I love to work with people who are as desperate as I was. I love that desperation, and I feel great compassion. And that's another thing I wanted to say. We have to always remember, these are people at the very worst points in their life, usually. I mean, you don't come to Overeaters Anonymous because you're wildly successful. You come to Overeaters Anonymous because you have failed. And so this one-on-one relationship, this willingness to talk to people every day, I don't know, it's a gentle, it's a loving, it's a sharing that is kind of magical. And it just in doing it, it helps that person it kind of raises their self-esteem a little bit to have somebody willing to talk to them every day at 6 a.m. So it's good for me, and it's good for them, and it's a demonstration of their willingness. So not everybody has to do it that way. And for the women with small children, I didn't do it that way. But if I can, I do. I try to get them through very quickly and try to talk to them every day. And because I will forget to say some things one day, and it's nice to know that the next day we can talk about it again, and I'll remember oh yeah, this is an important thing that I wanted to talk to you about. So that frequency really is quite helpful, I think. The last thing I want to say is that this is not just something, this is our calling. This is our responsibility. Our responsibility is to work with people who want to work with us. And if people don't want to work with us, you know, lovingly and kindly, we find them somebody else to work with them. You know, not everybody wants to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and talk to somebody very chipper in the morning. So we help people find another sponsor. And we're unceasingly kind to everybody. You know, I've had so many people scream at me and yell at me who I sponsor, and they're just afraid. I have so much compassion for where they are, because that's where I was, that I'm able to really hear, keep my ears open, and listen to what they're really saying. So this is a big deal, and it's an exciting adventure that we take here. For me, I don't know, being uniquely qualified to help other compulsive overeaters, I think that's a pretty big responsibility, and I love doing it. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Kate and Pat. I'm going to open it up for any questions you might have for either Pat or Kate.
Hello, this is Sharon in Portland. Thank you, Nadine, and thank you, Pat and Kate. I really appreciate the perspectives on sponsoring. I love sponsoring as well. I'm a big book sponsor. And the question I have, I think, is for Kate, is that I love your idea of blitzing through those steps to get that vital psychic experience, which causes the transformation that we're all looking for. And that takes 30 days, according to what you were saying. And then you wean it down after the 30 days to one time a week, if I heard you correctly.
Yes, for an hour.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what do you talk about, Kate? If you've gone through all the steps, gone through the big book, what is it that you talk about in that 1 hour?
Okay. Well, the ninth step takes sometimes people a year. If they owe a lot of money, if they, you know, if they can't find the people. So we start the ninth step, get them started, get them working on it, and then we continue to work on it. And while they're working on their ninth step, we introduce a tenth step. And so if I haven't been hearing from them a lot of tenth steps, sometimes people are saving up their tenth steps for me on the once a week thing. And sometimes they have questions about people they sponsor, or something they're eating is something, you know, their eating concerns them in some way. Whether it's sometimes people say the people who eat desserts say, oh, they're eating a little too many desserts. What's going on? This is the first thing people say, should I change my food plan? And I always say, well, how's your 10th, 11th, and 12th steps going? So there's a lot to talk about ongoing, because hopefully they're working with somebody else and they need a little, you know, they might need some guidance. Or there's a problem that they don't understand, and they're talking it out, and I'm only offering, if I've had experience in that area, offering something.
Thank you so much, Kate and Pat, and what a wonderful call tonight. And I'll pass.
Hey, my name is Claire, and thank you, both of you, all three of you, I mean, for your presentation. My concern is, where I live, we are getting more and more newcomers, but not having enough sponsors. And I would like some ideas. Okay, if I'm at a meeting, and I'm just a member of that meeting, I'd feel a little awkward about saying, you know, you don't have to finish all 12 steps to sponsor somebody, because it sounds kind of like, well, I'm a know-it-all, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't think a lot of people know that. And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions of how to get more people to sponsor.
This is Pat. Just a thought. One of the things I love about our program is that we don't ever have to say, you should. We can always say, I did. And when you talk about the example you just gave at a meeting, you can say, my sponsor asked me to start sponsoring when I got through step 3. And I was scared to death, but I was able to, with her help or his help, get going on that. So you're not telling anybody what to do. You're just sharing what you did.
And that's
why this program is so beautiful, because it's not a should. It's a we can.
I'm Merle Ann.
Region 1 has a virtual sponsorship program, which means telephone, Skype, email, texting. And this is good because that we're getting between 8 and 25 or so requests for sponsors a month.
Right.
And the range of reasons somebody wants a virtual sponsor really varies. There's the one where, you know, the meeting has four people and there's one person who sponsors and is full. And there's the whole thing of being just so remote from in-person meetings. Just had somebody request from a European country that wanted specifically, thing this person wanted was they wanted somebody in the U.S. that they could speak English to because that they did better at sharing their feelings in English than they did in their native language. And somebody, because I've sat in meetings with this person, wanted a virtual sponsor because she felt if she wasn't in the same room with the sponsor, if they were more anonymous, she would be more honest. Just a whole range of reasons. So anyway, we can always use more new sponsors. And, of course, we can use sponsees. We now tell them, if it doesn't work out, if this isn't a fit for you two, get back to us and we'll look for another potential sponsor for you, which leaves the ball in the potential sponsee's court.
Well, how do they reach the virtual sponsorship?
They go to the OA Region 1 website. It's a longer thing. It's like find-a-sponsor-or-sponsee. And if they just go to the oaregion1.org workshop, over on the, believe it or not, we have it hidden away in the more column, clear over on the right, you know, where you can, you know, all these things at the top you can choose. Well, I think more. And then if you open up more, then you can get to the sponsor-sponsee thing. One of the things that's tricky is the person needs, it's helpful if they understand whether they need to fill out the application. It's to be a sponsee or to be a sponsor, whether you want one. But anyway, they answer a few basic questions there. They do the send button, and it comes to the committee, and then we get back to them and let them know that we have their application, and then at that point or at some point, hopefully shortly thereafter, we send them a name. Sometimes in regular OA that have a real different way of working the steps and doing the program. And so sometimes I'll send them somebody that I know is kind of old-fashioned general OA and somebody that's one of these newer look groups because there's a difference in amount of structure, et cetera. You know, it's real different. And so in both cases, you know, the program is working the steps. It's just how you go at it and what material you use.
Claire, did that answer your question?
Oh, yes. That's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Beverly. One of the questions it seems to come up with sponsees fairly regularly is, I'm not losing weight, and people want me to tell them how to lose weight. And I have really struggled with that. I kind of end up saying, you know, I'm not an expert on that. And lately I've been telling people, well, I think you need to talk with your doctor. Do you have any experience with that?
Well, first of all, our responsibility is to abstain. What we look like, the outcome, is up to God, right? We have to surrender our weight. And that is really difficult for people to do. But also there's the problem of people eating too much at their meals or eating too much. And so, you know, that's why I'm really very open about having people tell me what they've eaten at the end of each day. And it will become very clear to people when they write it down, why aren't they losing weight? I mean, it's not rocket science, and some people who have health reasons, you know, for health reasons, they may have a thyroid problem or something may be going on. Sure, I think it's a good idea to send them to their doctor. However, this is what I was taught. If I eat moderately, dead on moderate, 80% of the time, healthfully 80% of the time, and I exercise moderately, the body that God wants for me will show up. And that happened for me. it may not happen for everyone, especially if you're older. You know, you may not get the body you want. I wanted to be 20 pounds lighter, and somebody I know wanted to be 20 pounds heavier. We just get what we get. And if it's within a healthy body range, that's good. I used to think I was going to turn out to look like Marilyn Monroe. Well, no amount of weight loss would make me look like Marilyn Monroe. It was a ridiculous idea. All it meant was I was just thinner. I was just within a normal body weight range. So I lost weight very slowly, and I think that was okay, because the goal is not to, you know, our goal is to abstain and be honest and eat moderately. You know, our goal is to do that. That's what our job is. What we look like in the end, that's up to God. And we have to really surrender that. I can't tell you how many people said, I want to be a size 6. Well, okay, I want $1 million too, but it doesn't mean I'm going to get it. It means that I'm going to abstain and I'm going to get that freedom, because that freedom matters more to me than I weigh 145 pounds, than weighing 125 pounds. That freedom means everything to me.
Thank you. All right. I want to thank so much our speakers. Thank you so much, Pat, and thank you so much, Kate, for taking the time and being with us tonight. And thank you, all of you, that you were on the line learning about this important topic of our program. I just want to read the paragraph out of the Big Book, Working with Others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity with drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. And the intensive work, that sponsoring, really does help our program, and it offers such peace and hope and the trust and the love that we give each sponsor and the sponsee is immeasurable. Thank you all for listening and being on the phone call tonight. Bless you. Have a good evening and good night.